you've been on council for almost 3 years now, Pamela, and
Yes.
I wondered how you'd found it generally.
I think that it's been pretty exciting. It's certainly there's a pretty steep learning curve when you join council. It's a big organization, and its mandate and the different bits that it delivers for the community are pretty extensive, and so it can take a little while to get your head around it all. But I've certainly found it really insightful and interesting, and it's been a real pleasure to be able to engage with the various communities that are represented in the Waikato constituency.
And the Waikato constituency is the whole of Waikato District, is that right?
Yes.
Waikato District Council area, yeah. So it's a pretty huge area to cover.
It is a very big area, and I think it's something like over 81,000 people living in that area. So so it's a lot of communities of interest. It's a lot of people that have different takes on what we should be doing as a regional council, what we should be doing within our communities, and various responses to particularly national direction. And so it's quite diverse, and I've really enjoyed getting around the various communities within the constituency over the last 3 years.
Yeah, and you became chair of the Strategy and Policy Committee, is that right?
That's correct.
I've not really understood the new committee structure since it was set up shortly after you became councillor. Maybe you could briefly explain
Sure. How
it works and what you're involved in.
So Strategy and Policy is a statutory committee of council, so it is always in place every triennium. Some of the other committees, they are either statutory and required, or there might be areas of interest that cause different committees to be established during different trianniums. So Strategy and Policy is it's a great committee. From my point of view, it's a great committee to chair. It's the only all of council committee. It does, when you chair it, you get an opportunity to chair all 14 of the councillors. and also I think there's real exciting items that come across the agenda, particularly in terms of response to national government direction.
I know it's a long time ago now, but I just wondered if you could recall how you became chair of it, because you were a new councillor, and usually chairs of committees are experienced councillors. Am I right there, or what was the story?
I think that it probably varies. I suppose that the chair of council at that time, Russ Remington, he spoke to me about what committees I was interested in, and I have spent probably over 2 decades involved in governance and either nonprofit boards or corporate boards, and so I have some skill sets around that piece, and I suppose strategy and policy is something I'm very interested in, and so when the opportunity was there, I was excited to take it up.
Okay, so you're talking about Kaivolution and Huntly Energy Efficiency Trust, and were there any other things you were involved in?
So those are two of the nonprofits that are based here in the Waikato that I was a part of. But I've also so recently just finished up with the WinTech board. Prior to that, was on the primary ITO board, Dairy Women's Network, Access Home Healthcare. So a variety of governance positions throughout the years.
Okay, and are you still doing all those, or are you now just focusing on regional council?
I'm currently focusing on regional council. I still have some involvement with Rabobank Upper North Island Client Council. So that's just another sideline, I suppose. But focus is very much on Waikato Regional Council right now.
And that's why I've seen you recently at a few meetings like Climathon a few months ago.
Yes.
How did you think that went? Have you seen much in the way of results from it?
I am not across where the final or the big award winners are in terms of implementing what they had suggested, but it was certainly, I think, a really fantastic initiative that Impact Hub Waikato rolled out. I know that it's challenging in COVID times to plan events and having that sort of an interactive agenda online over a number of different days. I think that they were ambitious, and I think that it really delivered in terms of bringing people together to think about things that we might do within our communities and to really put some effort into fleshing out what some of those ideas might look like and refining pitches so that the judges were able to get their minds across what the different groups were looking at. And so it was certainly exciting to participate in and to listen to what came out of it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see maybe in a few months' time what has come out eventually. Is any report coming back to regional council that you know of?
I'm not aware of whether or not that is going to be reported back to council.
And more directly under control of regional council was the Huion Freshwater that we were both at a month or so ago.
Yes.
And where's that one got to now? Have you been to some other meetings? Are they all much the same?
The approach has been similar across the different meetings. I believe that they've held nine different meetings across the region, and I've been able to go to two of them, and both of them, the one that you and I were at and the one up in Tuakau, were quite similar. It can be challenging to get people into a room these days, but I think that the feedback we've heard is that community members who have attended have enjoyed the opportunity to get their heads around what's in front of us in terms of a regional response to the national policy statement on freshwater, which is what these workshops are about. It's essentially a response to government direction on essential freshwater management, and having conversations with our communities about understanding what they value in terms of freshwater. So, rivers, streams, lakes, aquifers, freshwater bodies across the region. What's important to our communities and what are our communities' aspirations with regard to freshwater in Waikato, so that those can feed into a review of the Waikato Regional Plan and the regional policy statement as well.
And how do you see it going? Is it are people saying regional council is doing a good job, or they want a bit more work done, or what's the story?
I think that really these community meetings are an opportunity to have those discussions with community about what is it that they value, what priorities would they like to see reflected, as opposed to giving direct feedback on how they think regional council in particular has gone to date. This is about how do we as a council deliver on our obligations under the national policy statement in particular. I would encourage any of your listeners, though, that the consultation or the opportunity to provide input is still open through the end of this month. So anybody who hasn't had the opportunity to attend one of those public forums, you can go online to our website and search up freshwater, and I'm sure that it will come up, and there is an opportunity for you to put your thoughts in particular around priorities and what's important to you within the areas that you're interested in. And so I encourage people to do that because really it's important that when we're looking at these policy changes and how they might be implemented, it's important to have a variety of voices feeding into that. So I would encourage all of your listeners to go onto the Waikato Regional Council website and provide their input.
Okay. I heard that you're losing one of the freshwater ecologists, Bruno David, next week. Do you think that's going to be a setback to your work on freshwater?
I am not. As councillors, we only have one staff member that, or one employee that we employ as councillors, and that is the chief executive. So in terms of individual staff members and employees of regional council, I probably couldn't comment on particulars, but I certainly am familiar with Bruno and his work, and he does has provided outstanding advice. I think that And I am not across what Bruno's the reasons that Bruno is choosing to leave the regional council, but I think it's it could be evidence of sort of the war for talent that so many organizations across New Zealand are facing right now. I certainly have heard that across the different organizations I've been involved with, that it is difficult to attract and retain the really talented people that we need to do the work that's ahead of us. Certainly we're seeing, once borders have reopened, we're certainly seeing a bit of an exodus of some of our talented people, particularly talented young people. And I think it's great that they can finally go and explore different avenues, but it certainly does make it challenging for organizations that need that skill and talent here, in the Waikato region to address some of the challenges that are ahead of us.
Yeah, because how do you feel that the council's going on things like mapping the wetlands and making sure that they're not being damaged and that pollution isn't getting into that water and all the other issues connected with freshwater?
I think that there's certainly been a large program of work around mapping wetlands. I mean, we certainly all acknowledge that over the years there has been an impact on wetlands in the Waikato region. We don't have as many as we used to, but there's certainly been quite extensive work that's gone into aerial mapping using drones and satellite imagery, as well as LIDAR information to ensure that we understand where wetlands are and so that we know about the resource that we're trying to manage, I suppose.
Yeah, because do you think enough enforcement work's being done? Because I noticed there was a prosecution a year or two ago about somebody who had effluent from their dairy shed that was leaking into one of our local streams, but they just happened to be close to the main road, so somebody had spotted it. But I'm just wondering how many people away from the main road are doing things like that and don't get spotted. I think you've brought drones back, is that right? Or drones instead of helicopters?
We use drones with regards to, as far as I understand it, we use drones with regards to inspection of infrastructure. I don't believe that there is any use of drones in terms of monitoring work. Consent monitoring. I'm not aware of that.
Because do you think there should be stronger compliance measures taken? Because, as I say, that one happened to be spotted because it was near a main road, but most farms aren't near main roads, so, the chances of spotting things like dairy effluent getting into the waterways is much less. Unless you're using a helicopter or a drone or something.
I think that we certainly do rely on people calling in incidences to our 0800 number, whether that's with regards to dairy and effluent or any sort of issue that people see with regards to impacts on the environment. So, whether it's sedimentation or you know, whatever variety of issues with regards to consent management. We certainly do rely on people using the 0800 number to report things when they see it. I can't speak to the incident that you were referring to because I'm not aware what the specifics of that. I think that, you know, there's always things that we could do more of. I think that the level of resourcing, it can always be a problem with that, right? It costs money in order to have the staff on the ground and do that monitoring. I recognize that it is our mandate and our obligation, but finding that you know the availability of resources to do that to the level that pleases everyone, I think, can be challenging. So, but I certainly feel that we're out in force and responding to issues when they are brought to our attention.
That's presumably the advantage of using drones rather than helicopters. They're much cheaper to use, and individual staff members could relatively easily use them.
I don't know enough about the use of drones, other than I do know that there are certain requirements, legal requirements with regard to using drones over private land. I don't necessarily know how that works in with using drones for monitoring. Like I say, my understanding is that we are currently using drones for inspection of our infrastructure. So for instance, our flood infrastructure, drainage networks, those sorts of things. I'm not aware that we're using it for compliance.
Yeah, because there was some controversy within regional council over use of helicopters. It may have been before you became councillor, I'm not sure, but presumably it's come up again from time to time, has it?
That hasn't come up for discussion during the triennium that I've been on council now.
Okay, let's change subjects and talk about buses, because the regional council's got a consultation document on the future of the buses over the next 10 years at the moment. I think you voted against it, and there wasn't an opportunity at the meeting to explain why you voted against it. Why was it?
So the concern I have with what has been proposed in the discussion document or in the draft strategy was around the cost. It is a very bold and ambitious plan, and it has been approved to go out for consultation by the majority of councillors. In terms of the ambition that's associated with it, it really is with regards to that response to climate change. And absolutely, do acknowledge that transport is a significant, I think it's our second largest emitter in the Waikato region. And I certainly understand how we need to put efforts into managing those emissions. The aim in the strategy, though, is not just about being carbon neutral, it's about being carbon negative. And my concern is the cost in doing that. So they're endeavoring to achieve that that net negative emissions through a combination of electric fleet and offsets, purchasing of offsets. A concern I had is that the offsets could be either domestic or international. I'm not in favor of international offsets. I think that, in my view, that's just shifting problems elsewhere and not necessarily getting to the heart of things. So I'm not in favor of that being a part of the strategy. The other thing, the other concern I had was the cost to our community. So currently we're spending on average per person, and this is averaged across the entire region, but per person it's $71 per year. This proposal, if all of it is implemented, that cost goes up to, I believe it's $225 per person per annum. And And while I do think we need to take bold measures, I think that currently our communities are facing some real challenging economic times. And I don't, the feedback I get from constituents is that is an ambition that they're not sure they can afford. And so, so I would have liked us to take a slightly more conservative approach to that.
What would your solution to climate change be if you think that's too expensive?
I think that we need to look at a variety of aspects, but I would like us to set our sights. I think setting our sights on being carbon negative is too far at this stage. I think that we should look more towards a neutrality approach, and that's really about recognizing that there are a number of people in our communities that are struggling. Struggling with the cost of living increases, struggling with expensive housing, and
but we're going to be struggling even more we've got climate change, aren't we? I mean, at the moment we're seeing floods and we had droughts and
absolutely, and I am, as I say, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing anything. That's not my position at all. I just think that this plan was. On the overambitious side in terms of balancing our objectives and affordability for our communities. And I guess the other thing is that there was no plan to talk about those costs within the discussion document. And I think that it's really easy for us to put in front of our communities, oh, would you like this? And would you like this? And would you like that? And when things are offered to us, we often go, well, absolutely, I want that. But then later on, when we're told, oh, well, that's what this is now going to cost you, then sometimes we might have taken a different approach. And so I think it's really important that when we're talking to our communities about these challenging times that we've and challenging topics, that we're also talking about the costs associated with the different choices we might make, the costs associated with the different directions we might take, and that those are part of the conversation.
Because in my rates, I pay well over $1,000 a year for roading generally, and so it sounds not very much of that to be spending $200 or $300 on buses. And do you not see it that way?
Well, understand that $225 is per person, so that's not per rating account, that is per person. That's a per capita expenditure across the region. So
that's per capita for my rates, and I would have thought quite a lot of other people were paying similar amounts, but maybe I'm wrong. And it seems to me that only a tiny proportion of spending currently goes on buses, and this is a proposal to move it slightly and towards the more climate friendly direction.
What I mean is that what you presented, I'm assuming that you're saying that's one person associated with that rate take. I'm saying this is a per capita figure. So if you've got six people living in a property that has rates associated, then $225 is multiplied six times for the people living on that particular title, right? So it is a per capita amount.
A bit more than a third of our rates goes on transport at the moment, the great bulk of that.
Right, so that would be...
In fact, 95% of that goes to... Yeah. Providing for roads in one way or another, and only about 5%.
I think that there needs to. Sorry, go ahead.
Only about 5% goes to public transport.
As I say, I think that you know, this is an area that we need to have really constructive conversations with our communities about ensuring that we address the issues with regards to our transport emissions and climate change adaptation within our communities, but also alongside that we are having the conversation around affordability.
Yeah, but surely this is a consultation document, so the whole point of it is to have that conversation. And in fact, there's a commitment in there that
yes,
if it's supported, then there'll be further conversation in the long-term plans that follow.
Yes, yeah, it is a consultation document, absolutely.
So it still puzzles me that you voted against it.
I voted against it because, like I say, I don't think that it was reflective of, I don't think that the outcome that we're going out in consultation with was reflective of some of the challenges that our communities are facing right now. As I say, the majority of councillors supported this to go to consultation. It is going to go out to our communities. And I do encourage listeners to get online. That the submission process is open until, I think it's the 29th of July. I think it closes at 5 p.m. on that day. If you go onto our website, that's an opportunity for people to put forward their views.
Yeah, so we've covered fresh water, we've covered buses. Regional Council also does quite a lot on pest control. And we've got the local project here on Carrioy, which is gradually expanding. How do you see that going as a region?
In terms of effective pest
control across
our region,
get more resources, or would you again say that ratepayers can't afford to pay anymore?
We are currently doing a review on the natural heritage funding. So that's the fund that a number of community groups access in terms of doing various projects across our communities and across our region. I do know that all of those funds are currently under review and looking at whether or not there's some additional resources that could be put into that.
So there may be more coming from rates, or there may be some other way of funding it or other way of doing it?
That review hasn't concluded yet, so I couldn't really say where that's landing, but it's just acknowledging that, you know, that there is a lot of interest from community groups that are working in this type of area and that our communities are asking us to do more in that area. So hopefully out of that review, we'll see either different ways we can approach it or different ways we can fund it. So I look forward to seeing what comes out of that.
And another plan which is actively being worked on at the moment is the coastal plan, which affects us over this side of the region. Do you know
yes.
where that's got to and what it's likely to change? Because one of the problems, it seems to me, is that staff concentrate on producing plans and they don't concentrate on producing results. Am I being unfair that way?
Well, some of the plans that we produce, we have a statutory requirement to produce those plans. We don't plan just for planning's sake, I don't believe. I do think that it is with the intention of providing and encouraging better outcomes for our Waikato region.
Well, that's always the hope of everyone, isn't it? How realistic do you think it is?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And do you think it's actually going to achieve it? Do you see things improving?
I think that, it was long overdue, the review of our coastal plan. I believe it's been over 20 years since it was reviewed. And so I think that it's good that we've gotten onto it. Where it sits right now is there's a draft plan that has been approved by or endorsed by council to then go to further iwi consultation with it, as well as particular interest groups. So, for instance, the Hauraki Gulf Forum is being consulted with the current draft plan, and the intention is that then post those final consultations, that the plan would be notified probably early next year. And that, once the plan is notified, that's the opportunity for members of the community, if they hadn't engaged earlier on the piece, because to get the plan to the point where it is right now, alongside 14 workshops held with counselors over the last year and a half, there were public meetings held out in various communities prior to that to help provide input and shape the coastal plan review. So this will then, the intention, like I say, is to hopefully notify this plan early next year. And that's time for either organizations or members of the public to put in submissions as to how they see the plan sitting.
Yeah, and how much notice do you think is taken of public submissions? Sometimes people feel it's a waste of time putting them in because they don't get taken account of.
I think that submissions are a way for people to have their voice heard. I certainly instances of receiving submissions in the time that I've been in Waikato Regional Council, they certainly are taken into account, you know, whether that's the annual plan submissions or long-term plan submissions or the various aspects of project delivery that we do at Waikato Regional Council. I certainly have seen people's views taken on board in terms of shaping the final outcomes.
Yeah. And you're hoping to get elected for another 3 years. What do you see as the future for those 3 years? What would you like to achieve?
I suppose that for me, and some of this is comes from the role that I'm in as chair of strategy and policy. I really see regional council playing a significant role in providing a Waikato context for national policy direction. That's certainly, as the chair of strategy and policy, that's something that I've been involved in over the last 3 years. It's an area of particular interest to me. And I think that we often see policy direction come out of Wellington with a very Wellington-centric view. And we all know that, the Waikato region is very unique. There are a variety of communities of interest across it. And I think it's important that regional council takes a very active role in providing that regional context for national direction proposals. So I'd like to see us continue to play that role as effectively as we can.